Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state. And she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. In the last show, we ended with issues on relationships and money, specifically when he or she refuses to make any changes in accordance with the All Your Worth plan. What do you do? The basic rules from Professor Warren are change what you can. You make a promise to improve things as much as you can all by yourself. When you follow the plan, you will, over time, get substantial changes. The second point is that you don't nag. You cannot nag someone into a meaningful change. So, no nagging, no bitterness, and no complaining. That may not seem fair, but just think about something when it comes up that you love about your partner and focus on that, not on whether it's fair or not. A deep, intimate relationship isn't about what's fair. It's about the good, the bad, and whatever works. So that's what we focus on. Money is just one part of your relationship. And the next thing is you stick to the subject whenever money comes up. The point is don't have one of those giant, it's time to talk about money conversations. That creates a battle, and it is a battle over a giant abstract issue. You should be specific and helpful in the conversation. Keep it small, not giant, and present a simple, straightforward suggestion, preferably one that has a relatively easy answer. Keep it positive. Make it an invitation. Make it something constructive. It's a lot more likely to produce a good result if you face it this way. Essentially, you stay away from the all or nothing territory. You're not going to get complete reversals from these conversations. Change will come a little at a time. So don't demand complete instantaneous reform. One piece at a time. And if you approach it that way, you'll have some success. Professor Warren and her daughter Amelia have come up with 8 golden rules of money and relationships. They're for all kinds of couples, those rowing peacefully in the same direction, and those bashing against each other with the oars. If your mate wants to read the golden rules with you, all the better. But if you are on your own, start putting them into your own practice anyway. You may not make things perfect, but you can take the sting out of your money conflicts and maybe find a better way to compromise. And when it's all over, you may discover that you fight a whole lot less and smile a whole lot more. Rule number one is, what's mine is ours. This is the question we hear most about money and marriage. One bank account or two? The truth is, it really doesn't matter. Financially speaking, how many bank accounts you have just isn't a very big deal. It isn't a tenth as important as what kind of health insurance you have, and it isn't a hundredth as important as whether you pay off your credit card debt or how you invest your retirement funds. How many checking accounts you have is like how many file folders you want to use. Some people organize with just one, and some people organize with a lot. So long as you are organized, though, it just isn't a big deal. So why are there so many inquiries about what is, at best, a fairly minor issue? Well, because nobody wants to talk about what's really going on. When people ask one account or two, what they're usually asking is the same version of, is it all ours or can I still have mine? If I earned it, do I have permission to spend it how I want? In other words, talk of my account and your account is just another way to talk about my money and your money. So here is the real answer. If you are not married, legally or spiritually, it is yours. Your lives are somewhat separate, or at least you haven't promised to stay together forever, and so your money stays separate too. The bank accounts are separate, the bills are separate, and the big decisions are largely separate too. Any financial sharing you agree on is just that, an agreement to be negotiated and renegotiated according to the situation. But if you are married, things are different. When you get married, the money becomes ours. By and large, that's the law. Most important, that's just the practical truth. If you are like most couples, the assets belong to both of you, the debts belong to both of you, and so the money and the decision about money, all of the decisions, belong to both of you. Realistically, it just isn't possible for one of you to be poor while the other is rich. If this marriage is to last a lifetime, then you are not going to retire in comfort while your mate eats out of a garbage can. You are not going to live in a mansion while your spouse lives in the street, and unless you are a real heel, you're not going to take your vacation at an exotic resort while your mate bunks with the fleas in the third-rate motel. In short, you are married, and so is your money. But I earn all the money, or at least most of it. That's typical thinking. Yeah, and your mate does all the childcare or the housework or both. But he agreed to support us, so my money is just for me. And why should he be obligated to you while you aren't obligated to him? Keeping score like this guarantees that you both come out losers. Still not persuaded that one who earns the money isn't entitled to more? Then keep this in mind. Life is very long, and you really don't know how things will turn out. What may seem fair today can turn to dust tomorrow. Consider the story of Jim, who spent 20 years working as an executive at IBM. He made a lot of money and worked a lot more hours than his wife Debbie, who was an administrative assistant for an insurance company. They never had kids, and they hired someone to clean the house. So, by the laws of fairness, Jim could easily have told Debbie, "I earn it, so we'll spend it my way." But he didn't. They spent their money together, and never once did Jim utter the words, "my money." And you know what happened? He got cancer. Eat your guts out, bone-crunching pain. Why is this happening to me, cancer? By the time he got the diagnosis, the tumors had already pushed into his liver, lungs, and spine. Debbie tried cooking everything the doctor suggested, homemade stews, fruit smoothies, but Jim was too sick from the chemotherapy to eat more than a spoonful or two. Always a heavy man, he lost 100 pounds in 5 months. Night after night after night, Debbie was up, nursing him. When the tumors spread to his brain, his mind got cloudy, and there were times he didn't recognize her. Ultimately, he couldn't be left alone, and Debbie left her job so she could be there 24 hours a day. And I'll come back to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So now back to Jim and Debbie. If Jim and Debbie had subscribed to the fair theory of marriage, she would have darted out the door the day he got the diagnosis. After all, what she had to go through in taking care of Jim was about the least fair thing imaginable. And Jim certainly wasn't going to pay her back. The cancer was terminal. But their marriage wasn't based on fairness. It was based on sharing. They shared their home, they shared their lives, and they shared their money. And in the end, they shared the cancer. Which is all a long way of saying marriage and life work out a lot better when you pool the money and don't worry too much about yours and mine. Usually that translates into a joint checking account. For most couples, it works best when there is one primary account where all the paychecks and other money go. The account is under both names, so you both have access to the money and you both know where you stand financially. The joint account is just for the must-have expenses, the mortgage, the car payments, and so forth. Neither one of you should worry about bouncing a check because you won't write checks for anything except the basic bills, and you have already budgeted to meet those expenses. Money for wants and savings comes out as a single big check, not individual purchases, an amount that you have agreed on ahead of time. That way you don't have to squabble over little purchases or worry that your partner has overdrawn the account. And you should keep your $1,000 cushion in the joint checking account just in case. Every month, your checking account statement should look roughly the same. Paychecks going in, a certain amount of cash for wants going out, and a fixed amount going into savings. Does that mean that separate checking accounts are bad? No. If you and your mate prefer to keep everything separate, that can be perfectly fine too. There are plenty of couples where one partner has a lot of business expenses, or a tendency to misplace the checkbook, or a 20-year habit of managing his own bank account. Those couples may decide their separate accounts are the best way to keep things running smoothly. That's okay if you meet a few conditions. One, you both need to know where you stand financially. It's not okay to use separate accounts to keep secrets. Two, you both must accept 100% responsibility. That means it is not okay to use separate accounts as an excuse for her credit card balance is her problem or I covered my bills, so why should I worry? The money and the bills still belong to both of you, even if you find it more convenient to manage from separate accounts. And three, you make the big decisions together. It's perfectly fine to splurge on a new pair of shoes without consulting your mate. It's not okay to buy a new car or to empty your retirement account. If you can't agree on the big decisions, that is no excuse. Keep on talking until you find a reasonable compromise. Even if your accounts are separate, you have a joint financial future, which means you need to work together on the plans that will have a major impact on your lives. The second golden rule is be truthful and make it easy for your partner to be truthful too. You know that a good relationship is based on trust, but it can seem so easy to hide the credit card bill, to overstate how much you've been saving, to forget what those new shoes really cost. A few secrets here, a little white lie there, and life seems so much smoother. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to defend anything. And you don't have to worry that your partner will use the information against you later on. None of this is a good idea. So let's take a self-test about your truthfulness with your partner on money issues. These are just true or false statements. It seems so much easier just not to mention what I spend money on, true or false. I have borrowed money or run up debts without telling my partner, true or false. I have discovered things that my partner bought that I didn't know about, true or false. I have hidden money from my partner, true or false. I don't know how much credit card debt my partner owes, true or false. I don't really know how much money my partner makes, true or false. And the last one, we just never talk about money, true or false. If any of these statements are true for you, you have a problem with openness and honesty in your money partnership. A little white lie doesn't hurt, or does it? After a while, you have a lot of little threads to keep up with, a lot of things your partner doesn't know about. And even though you never mean to, you may find yourself telling bigger lies just to keep on. You aren't bad. In fact, you may have the best intentions in the world, but there is more and more in your relationship that isn't quite true when you take this approach. For example, Vicky never meant to lie to her new husband. She just slipped into it. Her folks had said they would pay for the wedding, but they didn't come through, and Vicky wound up charging a lot of the expenses. And then the credit card balance kept creeping upward with all the little expenses for their new apartment. Vicky got in the habit of snatching her Visa bill out of the mailbox before Tyler ever knew it had arrived, just so he wouldn't ask her questions. And then it happened, the first real live lie. Tyler had said he was a little worried about money, so Vicky tried to stay out of the stores altogether. Then she saw this really elegant little rug, perfect to set off the entry area and 33% off. She put the $162 on her credit card, and when she got home that evening, she had every intention of telling Tyler. She said, "I mean, geez, there was this horrible stain on the floor I was just trying to cover up." But then he came in all tired and cranky, and he sees the rug, and his face gets all red, and he goes kind of stiff. So she quickly blurted out, "It's from the thrift store, $10 cash." He immediately relaxed and laughed and never noticed Vicky's guilty look. But it turns out Tyler had his own secrets, or at least that's what Vicky suspected. "He gets tips, and I know he doesn't tell me how much. And he'll say things like, 'Oh, we don't have enough money for that,' without me ever seeing a bank statement or anything." Mistrust and evasions over money can be one of the most difficult cycles to break. After all, if your partner isn't honest about money, why should you be? There's just one reason, because it's the only way to save your relationship. Really and truly, mistrusting your partner about money is no different from mistrusting your partner about anything else. Suspicion will eat away at your relationship day after day. So what can you do? Sure, you can't control your partner, but you can decide that from now on, you will be totally honest with him or her about money, no matter what. No more lying, no more covering up, no more hiding receipts or holding back on how much overtime pay you got. Just the truth, plain and simple. And the other half of your commitment is that you should make it easy on your partner to be truthful. This makes all the difference between good intentions and real success. You may not be able to force him or her to tell the truth, but you can promise that you will never belittle him or her, never make your mate feel bad, and never criticize when the truth comes out. And I'll return to the story after a station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you're listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Coming back to the story, Vicky remembers the exact evening that it all turned around for her, the date Tyler came home and opened her credit card statement. "By the time I got my key out of the lock, he was screaming. I mean, I was scared. I never saw him so mad. I gotta admit, I wanted to lie just to make him stop, and then I thought, this is so stupid. He has it all in black and white, for pity's sake. So I told him everything, all of it, what I'd bought and not told him. How my dad couldn't pay for the wedding, but it was too embarrassing to say. I swear, I cried and cried. I never felt so small in all my life. But Vicky didn't stop with a good cry. I just knew we had to get it out there. So I was like, how much money do you really have? Have you bought stuff I don't know about? She tried hard not to hurl the questions as accusations, but really to ask. And then it started to slip out. His secret stash, his hidden purchases. I was so mad at first. I mean, he made me feel so bad, and he was screwing up too. But then I thought, this is what marriage is all about, right? Sticking it out, for better or for worse. And then I was really sympathetic. I mean, really. This stuff is hard for him, too. The bottom line point is get honest. Ultimately, you can't hide money decisions from your most intimate partner. You have the things you bought. You owe the money you borrowed. If you keep adding to the lies, someday it will all crash down around you. So make the decision, right here, right now, to tell the truth. And then resolve to make it easy for your partner to tell the truth, too. And if you do, you'll do better with money, and you'll do better with each other, which is what it's all about. And that takes us to the third golden rule. Stop playing the blame game. The question is, which of you is responsible for your money, you or your mate? And the answer is, the both of you. You already knew this, of course, and yet it can be so easy and so satisfying to blame your partner. That's right, blame your partner for all your money troubles. In the blame game, you aren't responsible, either for what went wrong or for making things better. So let's take another self-test. Are you caught in the blame game? Again, these are true and false statements. First one is, my partner spends too much money on things we don't need. True or false? My partner blames me for our money troubles. True or false? My partner should earn more money, true or false? Sometimes we spend money when we get angry with each other, maybe partly to get even, true or false? I feel like I need to justify how much I spend or how much I earn or don't earn to my partner, true or false? Next one is, my partner thinks only about himself or herself when spending money, not about my needs or wants, true or false? When I see the bills my partner ran up, I get really angry, true or false? And the last one is, deep down, I believe our money troubles are primarily my partner's fault, true or false? If you marked true for any of these statements, you and your mate have a problem with shifting responsibility and blaming each other for your money problems. So let's get it all on the table. Your partner got a bad deal on the car. He took a new job thinking he would make a lot of money, and instead he got fired. She splurged on a brand name purse that she really couldn't afford. He never balances the checkbook. She spent money on something stupid just to get even with you. The list of sins goes on and on, but what should you do about it? The solution is let it go. Let the past be past. Take a deep breath and put it out of your mind. Sure, it's hard to be that magnanimous. The all you're worth concept is not just for saints. So if you're not up for forgiveness is divine, then try this on. Be selfish. Get over it because actually this is best for you. You're not forgiving your partner because you're so high-minded. You're forgiving your mate because you can't afford not to. The blame game is the fastest road to the poorhouse. Eye for an eye spending will leave you both blind and broke. You need to get over it so you have a chance to get ahead financially. Forgiving your mate means taking 100% responsibility for your actions. That means that you decide to do what you know is the right thing with your money, no matter what your partner does. No more giving yourself permission to do things you know aren't smart just because your mate has also blown a bunch of money you can't really afford. And no more telling yourself it is his job to shop for the mortgage or balance the checkbook or pay off the credit cards so you can just look the other way while your finances tumble downhill. You are in this together, and stupid decisions multiplied by two just makes for more stupid decisions. Get straight what you can get straight. But what if your mate isn't quite so willing to let go of the past? There's nothing like your partner shaking the long finger of blame in your direction to send the best of intentions flying out the window. Instead of battling it out, try this. Next time your spouse brings up a mistake you made, try saying, "You're right, I made a mistake. I really blew it. If I had to do it over again, I would do it differently. I really wish I hadn't done that." And also mean it. An honest confession can suck the wind right out of the sails of self-righteousness. The next time you get tempted to sink into another round of tit-for-tat spending battles, remember this. The blame game is about mistakes from the past. But if blame causes you to compound past mistakes by making more stupid decisions, then you are letting yesterday's mistakes poison your future. You can't change yesterday, but you can decide what to do about tomorrow. You can decide to let yesterday's mistakes infect your decisions today, or you can decide to learn whatever lessons you needed to learn and move on. You can decide to let blame eat away at your happiness, or you can decide that you care more about living a good life today and about making tomorrow better. No matter who earns the money, no matter who spends it, you are both 100% responsible. It is time to let go of the blame game, time to let go of the past. It's time to get on with the future you deserve. And now we'll move on to rule number 4. Give each other some free money. So here's a sample. Renee and Samuel fight like wildcats over every little purchase. Carlos and Melissa haven't quarreled in ages. And Renee and Samuel make a lot more money. So what's the difference? Free money. Back when we talked about wants, we laid out the principle that each partner should get a stash of cash to spend on whatever he or she wants. A little bit of personal financial space where nothing gets reviewed by your partner. Does that make it okay to hide purchases or deceive your partner? Of course not. Free money is premised on honesty. It starts with the two of you sitting down together and agreeing on what you can really afford for fun and how much you want to divide it up. Only then can you banish the worry that overspending may drive you into bankruptcy or that your partner may be guzzling the champagne while you're sipping weak tea. The amount has been fixed, you decided together what is reasonable, and you trust each other to live within the bounds you've both agreed on. That is a real act of trust. The amount of money doesn't really matter. It's whatever you think you can afford. But resist the temptation to skip over this. If you think you can't afford any fun money, then we're here to tell you that you can't afford not to have some fun money. No matter how tight your budget, even if you are down to shaking nickels out of the couch cushions and redeeming soda cans, every person in every relationship needs to make a little room for individual fun money. Once you have agreed on some free money, make it really and truly free. Joe can blow it on fancy power tools, and Lisa can indulge her fascination with high-style shoes, even if the garbage in the closets are already full. Let it go. If it makes Joe happy, and if Lisa feels a thrill, that's all that matters. There are no right purchases and wrong purchases, and no one should be pointing out how the money could have been better spent. Give each other the space to do the things that make you both happy. And we'll continue with the golden rules in the next show. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.